So dukkha is something that is very regular, known, recognizable. No one's fault. And yet there's ways in which we can inadvertently or even on purpose promote it. We can get so used to it, it feels like we're more alive when we're struggling. We can miss out on the idea of simplicity because we may be so used to drama. So there are ways in which dukkha is certainly something that our identity can start to really become blended with. But when we can hold it with this idea of space, which I really love as an opportunity for how to be with something in the space of discomfort, there is inevitably some space. And meditation is one of the best vehicles for the recognition of that. Sukha is sometimes translated as pleasure. And so when we hear that sensations come in pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, pleasant is often used, the word being sukha, and unpleasant being dukkha, and then adukkha is the word for neutral, because when we in Sanskrit put ah in front of a word, it means the absence of. So like avidya, vidya is the word for awareness, and avidya is this absence of awareness that is something that grows in recognition that without awareness, we can be so easily identified with our misperceptions. And so it's kind of the valley of discomfort when we first start to meditate and see that we've carried a lot of ideas about ourselves and our world that need revisioning and reordering. And so we come with avidya, and we learn that vidya or awareness is also our nature. It's not something that we all live through, but we can live from it more often when we recognize that it's the ground of consciousness. And so adukkha is this sense that there's an absence of discomfort, but it's not in the category of pleasurable. I find that the longer that I've practiced, the more adukkha feels like sukha. You know, the simplicity of being without agitation, the simple lack of needing to plan what's going to happen soon or in the long run is a kind of pleasurable space. So ka is the space part of the word, and su is often related to when it's not just categorized as a sensation, because in Sanskrit, words have different meanings in different contexts. But when we hold the word in its fullness, it's not related so much simply to the ease of temporary enjoyment. It's related with a deep-seated recognition of the joy of living. And so sukha, on a fully in kind of embedded in the psyche level, where it's less coming and going, is kind of like the background, even when we're facing dukkha. So there it's kind of closer to the idea of moksha, kind of being liberated from the ignorance that life should be stable in one thing, that it's impermanent, that it is ever-changing, means that when dukkha is present, might I kind of pick up my interest? Might I really lean in and learn to listen? What are the messages here? Because there's a call to attend in any form of dukkha. And when we think of the confluence of energy that we carry in our system and kind of relate it to the different dimensions of experience, we could say that when we tap into the belly center, the hara, lower dantian, the kaph, this area is a place where we can recognize dukkha in terms of me versus this body, me versus this place, so this space I'm in, and this planet I'm on. So a real sense of me and what's here. And we can tune in and wonder, where is their dukkha? Where is their sukha? How might I be willing to meet the presence or absence of each or both? And so that's very much the personal realm. If we come into the energy center located in the chest region, the heart center, then the theme changes a bit to aloneness versus togetherness. And so we could say that when we tune in, when we pause, whether it's a formal or informal meditation time, we kind of look through the landscape both internally. So if there's aloneness, there can be a sense of isolation. And so we can recognize that in the space is some psychological pain. So that's dukkha. And feel like that has permission to be here as well. Let me explore what that's like without automatically assuming it shouldn't be here or something is wrong with aspects of myself feeling lonely or isolated. This isn't inevitable. Aloneness can also be experienced as welcome, especially if we've been really full of lots of people and we like time to just have our own conversation with ourselves and the universe. And so dukkha and aloneness, sukha and ease or enjoyment when alone, neither are inevitable and each are known by each of us, but in maybe different percentages and gradations right now. And willing to be curious about that, relating to that in ourselves, to stay current and alive, like a quality of freshness, because we can be fresh with dukkha and really honor and respect ourselves, rather than kind of layer disturbance on disturbance when we think we're bad or wrong for certain experiences. And so I think the Buddha Dharma is one place to really re-inhabit ourselves with this quality of Maitri, this quality of a friendship to all parts of ourselves, even those that feel really disturbed and upsetting or even pathological to other people, not to abandon ourselves in the midst of aloneness or togetherness. Now that's something that grows with practice and with support. So togetherness, another experience of the heart center, and togetherness can feel like connection, that sukha, that real sense of enjoyment when there is an exchange, whether it's verbal or nonverbal. So we tune in and we become real awake to what's current in our life that way. And so there's often a sense of scanning, and when we meditate, we're not alone, even if we physically are. There's often lots of people, present people in our life and past ones who have influenced, who have we've enjoyed or been hurt by. So togetherness can have that dukkha sense as well. When we've been or are being, when people are around us, ignored, or when there's a sense of invasiveness, a sense of not being seen or recognized or like we matter. And so we kind of look into the landscape when we're in this space, aloneness, togetherness, dukkha, sukha. What's here now? And remember, with this quality of meditative awareness, the invitation to host the whole spectrum was the beautiful and long-lived message of the Buddha and many before and since, but definitely known for in this particular stream in such a clear and crisp and invitational way to become our own kind of steward of what we carry in our system. Many aspects within us, parts, subpersonalities. So when there's a real sense of kind of inner quiet or sense of feeling unified, there's not a lot of being pulled on for different needs. And so we can recognize that and really enter this sense of wakefulness that has a heart-based attitude. At other times, it's not that way at all. And it's not a worse time per se. It might be a harder one. And so relaxing the childlike definitions of good and bad, worse and better, is something that I have felt so liberated to kind of remind my own ever-growing psyche about, and others, especially those more dependent on my own reflections and speech, like our children and our friends and partners. So not to turn away when others bring us material that is dukkha for us or dukkha for them. How might we have if more hearts than one looking into something with care? And at times, inevitable confusion, and not to feel like we've got to push the stream to figure this out. Meditation is a place where space or ka becomes the holding environment, not just the people in the space, the body, heart, and then the third center, the mind space. So the personal is very much the hara, and the heart is very interpersonal, very related with the interdimensions of our own psyche and then the collective diversity of other people. And then the head center, you could say, carries this sense of me versus the ideas I'm currently involved with and hosting, and me in touch with at times just the field of experience itself in a quality of creativity and engagement or quietude and vastness. And sometimes that creativity can be such a strong downpouring of information that can be sukha or dukkha, depending on where we are and how receptive we're feeling and what else is already crowding the stream. And so what you're hearing, I hope, is that there's no inevitability about each. There's a capacity or a quality of interest and relatability that grows with skillful practice, with path activity, it's called. And leaning into the idea of space within either sukha or dukkha feels like one of the great gifts and assets that we end up having within our capacity when meditation is a regular occupation and endeavor. So thought we could start that practice now and come into first a simple body pose, and then we'll sit up for a 12-minute meditation, and then we'll come into another body pose, and then we'll sit up for another 12-minute meditation, and then we'll do that a third time. So three yoga poses, just each will be only 3 minutes, interspersed with 12-minute meditation sessions. So I really am fond of short pockets of meditation that have this quality of strong intentionality and crispness, and then the opportunity for deep listening doesn't start to get so frayed. We try to spend enlarged amounts of time when there's a lot pulling on us. And so here, while it's being led in the focus that you've come into with me and all of us, you can also rewire permission in yourself as you go through the week ahead to do these briefer pockets of time and feel how potent they can actually be. You could even do a half version. 6 minutes can be quite enlivening to check in, to notice the sukha, the dukkha, and the space in which one is willing to hold it rather than try to analyze, figure out, confine, or define ourselves by what's happening. It's like fresh bath. So let's take, if you can take a little space, even if you're on a bed and that's the only place for you right now to be, just put your feet out in front of you for butterfly pose. And so not right up against your pelvis, but a little further in front. So you look down and there's a diamond shape. And pull the flesh back so you're on the front edge of your sit bones. If you have some sensitivities or areas that feel injured or possibly compromised, then you can have an extra prop under that side or just roll up a nearby pillow or blanket. And then we start to tilt forward as long as seated forward bends feel safe and pliable for our spine. If that doesn't feel appropriate, you can instead scoot closer to your heels and simply lay back, letting your knees only butterfly about it. Right? We'll stay here for 3 minutes. And if you're in the forward fold version, you can start to round your spine once you've tilted forward from your pelvis. You could drop your head for a while, but it's a lot on the back of the neck. So it is nice to support the head if you can with the chin in your hands, possibly. I could sometimes put my elbows into the inner arches of my feet, or if you have some props, you could stack them, you could stack your fists. But you find your particular edge where you went from neutral to interesting to where you can't go any further and no need to force or pull. In this way, we're taking a pose for the yin aspects of the body and mind, where we simply acknowledge the limitations once we've hit them, and then we settle in and we relate to the inner experience as it unfolds, rather than try to improve or manage what's happening with expectation. One of the invitations in a yin pose that can bring that ka element in, especially to the mind space, is to anchor your attention on the simplicity of the breathing experience. And if it feels possible, to just let it slow down a bit. Sometimes there's labored breathing and that's uncomfortable. There can be dukkha in the breath. And we can meet that difficulty with less expectation that we need to take a deep breath. And so this real sense of honoring the short breaths gives some space for the dukkha. When there is the sukha, the delightful space of respirations that feel full-bodied almost. Then we end up being less preoccupied and busied by the content of our current relationships and attitudes towards ourselves and our life. And so that gives us a little break, a little holiday from the I, me, mine preoccupations, which it can be in. Of a need to be so compelling. And since you're here just a little bit longer, notice where any dukkha is in the body, anywhere where there is some pressure, some added pulling that's experienced, some discomfort, and let the breath inside you feel like a tap has been opened and is being allowed to flush through that space. So the congestion of sensation and the space of chi flow are coexisting. And then we'll come up on an in-breath, stacking the vertebras until we're upright and taking a seated position for meditation. Unless you're unwell, then laying on the bed or the floor or seated in a chair with your feet planted on the ground. This meditation session will highlight focusing on the power center in the abdomen, the hara, and riding the waves of change in there. Since it's kind of the nucleus where we can experience ourselves more present, more personally awake, to our direct experience. So it's a wonderful portal. It's an opportunity now for us to just host from this orb, so this wide circumference from the surface to the interior and to the backside, and then wide to the rim around us, we'll settle in and notice the changing nature of sukha and dukkha for 12 minutes. I'm going to ring the bowl to start. And as you settle into your seat, if it's upright, elongating through the crown of the head toward the heavens, and yet relaxing the musculature, settling the hands, the sit bones. And the feet. aligning your motivation for this time of your life in the immediacy of connection to nowness to be of benefit for your own and others. So personally and interpersonally now we practice. If the knees, one or both, start to feel too much congestion, being in flexion, and certainly you can sit with the legs outstretched, slightly wider than your hips out in front of you, or you can take the Tara pose where you just put one foot down on the ground, one knee is up, that your inner elbow can hug around. And so as we settle in to the belly center, we become still with an interest to inhabit with a wider willingness to wonder what's possible into the field of discomfort. But if dukkha becomes too rigid and we feel somewhat raw with it, then we move. So this isn't a belligerent practice of rigid stillness. But it is one where we attempt to observe the dukkha of sensation and explore what it's like before any automatic fixing. And if you've been experiencing body pains, some of them come up because we're sitting, but some we are already carrying that will start to be noticed because we're not busy with other avenues of behavior. So you know your pockets. It's just from the belly, go to them briefly and send a quality of care. Just like you would a friend who's feeling some discomfort or upset. Like a welcoming gesture psychologically of you're welcome to be here even with this pain. Might be in a shoulder or in the back, the groin or the inner body, one or more places. And so there's just a sense of scanning about for your own systems, dukkha, whether it's mild or major, and giving it room to be in the space, the ka, of this meditation session. And I'll invite you to actually use the sound, ka, silently to yourself when you notice you get distracted by anything but this. And when you hear yourself repeating or saying ka, it's an invitation to come back to the space of the belly and the space of being awake to the presence or absence of sukha or dukkha or both. From this hub in the hara, or center of the abdomen between your navel and your pubic bone, just resting in a wide way because there is space here. It's a spatial realm, even though it also has this crowdedness of physicality. Think of it as a domain kind of to enter our own secret garden of presence with ourselves in the personal realm. Holding in the space, the pleasant and the unpleasant, and knowing what's here. Just rest with the knowing, not the history or the future of them. Right now, there's this immediacy. And from this knowing the space of the body, also the space of the room or the place you're in, and the dukkha and sukha that's here in this atmosphere. And then widening your view out to the space of this planet. Each of us has a relationship to it. The sukha of your favorite place on the earth. The dukkha of so much suffering and strain and change. So this heavenly body, this space we're in, this human body, not turning away from the sukha or the dukkha. A simple being with the way it is right now. And then opening your eyes if they've been closed. And then ring the final bell at the end. We're transitioning from a stable posture, meditation seat, to another yin pose. So let's bring our feet behind us and take the knees apart. Now, I should say I'm used to lots of bent knee activity. If you need to extend a bit and move or to massage before we change shape, please do. And then wide knee child's pose is what we're taking next, which if this much flexion needs some support, you can put a rolled t-shirt or a folded towel behind your knees and then take the knees apart as wide as they're able to go. The toes are turned in towards each other. They don't have to touch. We can have padding under the ankles if there is some harshness there. But the weight isn't going to be so much sitting back on them. We're going to lean forward and come down onto our elbows. Or you could come down onto a stack of pillows or a bolster if you have one. Or you can lean all the way down to the ground if you prefer and kind of stack the palms for your chin to rest on. So in the last pose, butterfly, and this wide knee child's pose, we're pulling the bones of the legs apart to stimulate the tissues that run along the inner legs. And here is how the main channels that relate with our overall sense of vitality, our sense of health and digestion, namely the kidneys, the liver, and spleen. Meridians. And so these are so primary for our overall well-being that I like to intersperse these poses with this directive of connecting to the body and mind through meditation. We're here just a few moments. Yin poses are held anywhere from 3 to 10 or more minutes at a time. But long holds are something we gradually work towards and aren't always necessary. Short ones can be quite beneficial. Short-ish, I should say. Like 3 minutes. And sometimes the enhancing of elongating our breath is an inner method we can employ. And other times, just like in shamatha practice, just like in mindfulness of the breath, we don't attempt to change, but we also don't ignore the breathing process. It becomes a lovely anchor for inhabiting our organism to be with the breath body in a simple, ongoing way for a few moments here. Like meditation, yoga postures done in this yin way are ones in which there is no objective to get to a further place or create something specific. There's the recognition of pulling on certain tissues to activate the natural meridian systems, reflushing. But in terms of the physical expectations of kind of posturing, that's kind of taken out of it. So you could do less, you could do more than yesterday, or somebody who might be practicing next to you can look totally different than you. But there's no aesthetic idealization about a posture in this style, which is something then that is welcomed when we do a more yang active movement practice. It tends to turn the dial down on any striving in any way we are moving through physical yoga poses. We can still be quite strong and engaged without the pressure of performance and then the tendency to ignore sensitivities and create then imbalances and injuries. So let's take us about 5 more breaths in the pose you're in.
There's a question about this pose. May I bring that question in?
Well, let's come out of it first. Let's come up and lift your hips away from your feet and bring your knees side by side like regular child's pose. So it's more neutral for a moment. And then, yes, Marty, what's the question?
This person asks, can you name the bones with more specificity about the space you are focusing on to create the release, the hara, and the inner thighs?
The femur bones in the legs, I think that's what they might be talking about. In this pose, we're moving the femurs apart to stimulate the meridians, so the energy channels on the inner legs, and I named 3. And that would be the kidneys, the liver, and the spleen. Yeah. And then we're going to come and sit up for meditation session number 2. So take your seat. So continuity from physicality to stability and the mind training and the inner listening. We focused on the hara. We'll return to that as we begin here freshly in the stillness posture, whether upright or laying down. Whether our eyes are gently shut or letting in some light, I'll leave that to you and what you're used to for now. The hands resting face down, no mudra. Long through the torso, so the crown of the head moves up. The sit bones rest down. Slight tilt towards the front edge of the sit bones without leaning forward. Just to create a little tilt of the sacrum toward the lumbar. And so the hara becomes our main hub of collecting ourselves and calm abundance. And then we'll maintain a sense of some presence there, but let's shift our attention more predominantly to the heart center in this sit. And now we'll let the theme of the meditation time, not so much me in this body, although yes, of course, I am here meditating in this body. So that's going to be like 20%, but the main focus of this is me and sense of aloneness and togetherness in my life. So the interpersonal realm. And the combination of dukkha and sukha involved. But we'll start with the ka. We took su and du away from the word sukha or dukkha. Ka in both of them means space. So sukha, the space of comfort, and dukkha, a space where we're uncomfortable. But both relate with space. And so the space of the heart is an attitude of welcoming whatever we find comes to the space of this meditation time, which, as before, we're already in it. It's going to be a total of 12 minutes. And we'll plant in the inquiry, how am I with and towards myself and the many parts of my psyche right now? Any areas of me that need some care, some attention, some quality of inclusivity, whether there's a that real sense of sadness and distress, or joy and communion. What's here now? And often it's a combination. And in this way, what the space invites us is to let be in equanimity, to meaning let the dukkha be here, but also let the sukha be here. Because space has room for both. When I hold my dukkha with space, it's a whole different flavor to it. So there's the breath, there's the beating heart, and there's the psychological and kind of interdependency with others. So interpersonal dukkha is natural and visits us all. And so in this space, whoever comes into the space, whether it's because your relationship is feeling really sweet, or whether it's soured, or whether there's a lot of confusion and unintegrated and digested material between you. Right now, there's just a sense of viewing what's in the space and giving it space to be. This is me in my life and these others in it, like this right now. And so the dialogue about others and us in relation to them can really pull us, and we come back to that sound of ka. Let the sounding of ka be a reminder that the space with others can be held without going right now into all of the particulars. Just the pain or pleasure of sukha or dukkha. Because those are feeling tones. And any content that's verbal, kind of give it to the space. Let it, like riding on water. Let it take form briefly, and like the next exhale, there's this ka. The space has natural vitality of creativity that may influence whatever it is that has become congealed about anyone or anyone's view of us that we know others are carrying or assume they are. Let's take refuge in the ka, the space, along with the dukkha and the sukha. In this space, in this place, just the mood of Maitri, the mental flavor of loving care towards ourselves, and moisturize and nourish this heart-based attitude in this field of meditation. Something simple, like, may I be willing to be in this space with myself. In this space with this person or with these people. Present in my life right now with this dukkha, with this sukha. So not turning away and right now not getting into the minute details about ourselves and them. May I be willing to be with the presence or absence of others. Stretching ourselves for people we may miss. Giving them the space to be in the space they are and us permission to fully be in the space we're in, which is right here. And without breaking this quality of attention, this third asana yoga pose we'll do is a seated twist. So you could just bring one foot to the floor so the knee is up and wrap the opposite elbow around it or the hand. And then the free hand goes behind. And on the fingertips, we push the floor away some to help us turn around towards the space behind us. Now the quality of space that is related with ka is a kind of domain of consciousness space. But also if we open our eyes, we are literally not looking in front of us or to the side, we're looking more behind. And we can see that there are objects around, but there is also space, which is the absence of something. And so look into that absence, that ka, where a person or a creature could move into that space because there is room, there's openness. And so Space relates with openness, roominess. Mystery, like anything could happen. I'm simply paying attention, not enforcing something or ignoring what could change. So there's a quality of presence that's related with being spacious in our quality of wakefulness. We can then really receive messages when someone else is trying to relate to us and let us know that our dukkha has infected them in some way. Our defensive structure is so automatic because we're so afraid as children of punishment, because it was often alarmingly isolating. And so as adults, that is so hardwired into our system. So to be able to listen into the space when we're with ourselves, and then transport that when we're with others. Because oftentimes people are being indirect and trying to give us cues. And when there is direct, harsh interaction, which comes up with people we're very close with, how can we listen to what's underneath the pain of the anger that may be coming towards us? So this ability to listen is very much related to how we are with others. And the potential to be kind of on our own side, but also be able to hear and be with how other people are viewing us and say, I'm sorry, when it's really merited. Or even when it's not, and that would just help the relationship. Like, oh, this has been a misunderstanding. I want to be the one to start freshly. Let's twist to the other side, so the other knee up. And now we may be familiar with being willing to go into difficult conversations in the dukkha of pain that was inflicted on purpose or from parts of us that we were unaware of, that kind of had the inner organism and we were totally identified by. And in wanting to revisit and revision an opportunity for connection with someone, it may not be there. Others aren't in that space with us. And then to feel how that creates dukkha in our own hearts. We may not want to turn away, but others will and have, my life, no doubt in yours, turned away. And so to be able to meet that dukkha and build that kind of forum of compassion with ourselves when we have pushed others away, inadvertently or directly. And I'm living with that, knowing that there is also still sukha. It may not be felt right now, but the sukha behind the dukkha is the willingness to meet whatever's here. It's not the sukha we use to talk about pleasure, but it is the connection to ourselves and our reality with a kind of, no matter what, dedication. Whatever it is I'm meant to connect with, because it's here, it's mine to connect to. So let's unravel. And I want some time for a few questions and interactions, and then to leave the last few moments for a third meditation. We can do a half of a Ghataka. 12 minutes is a half a Ghataka. 6 minute at the end, but I'd love some sharing on your part how this is for you so far, what's come up for you in your meditation today, anything at all you'd like.
Lawrence has his hand up. I could bring Lawrence on screen.
That would be great.
Feel free to unmute, Lawrence.
Greetings.
Hi.
Thank you very much. Very, very dense, very interesting. Question. A few weeks ago, Marnie, what was her name? The woman with the V and the breathing? Anyway, someone did a talk about breathing and talked about the five diaphragms. And they started off with the anus as the diaphragm beginning the breathing. And I had never thought about that. I'm very somatic. I dance. I play sports. So I'm very kinesthetic, somatic. And I thought I was really good on my breathing. And she was talking about the five diaphragms, starting with the anal sphincter, which made me think of Kegels. And also when I did Kundalini yoga and the breath of fire. How does, if you have a thought or have explored this, how does that breathing, starting with the anal sphincter, it must tie into the hara and the meditation you were giving us about the spaciousness on the inner thighs and creating space with the femurs and just opening that space for hara and energy?
It sounds like a very compelling focus to go into the different areas we could recognize as places where energy enters and exits, you know, and how diaphragmatic movement is a way of dispersing that. And whenever we are frightened, you could say whenever there's been a surprise, the anus tends to grip. And so that diaphragm closes, and then that can be habitual. And so this real sense that when we come to our system in order to find the refuge of Ka or space, that this added languaging to discover like five diaphragms, or to move the knees apart to notice that different meridians are pulling, and now you might notice more flush of energy flow at times as you get more sensitive. Being kinesthetic, no doubt you are. To use a kind of scanning to attend to what's here now, you know, staying with the theme of what I'm bringing in, which could have been any number of other areas of focus, but really to notice, is there a gripping of the anus? And is that something, as I attend to it, what's that like? Rather than should I or shouldn't I? I think the kind of somatic intelligence, or what I often call awareness intelligence or AI, starts to be our inner orientation when we go into the meditative mood of kind of clear seeing or vipassana, where when we're prior to that, we often do lots of methods in order to have more vitality and more listening skills, so that we can live more awake in a natural, kind of unfettered way. So I would say I do the yin and any breathing practice or any scanning as a way to influence the potential for more intelligence in the soma. And then to kind of let all of that go and let listening kind of come to the foreground, where any disturbances kind of are offered to the space in the body, the space around, the space that's kind of universally intelligent, as the Taoists would say. And so we're doing kind of a mixture. Thank you for bringing that.
Thank you so much.
There's a lot of love in the chat for you and the blending of having the movement practice with the meditation. So feel free to peek there if there's no, oh, there's a hand.
Hi.
Hello. Hi, first of all, thank you for the session so far today. I really enjoyed it. While I enjoyed it, I have a question, and it's a bit random, a bit general, but it's something going on in my body right now. So I think from time to time, we have some discomfortness from our body while we are doing meditation, no matter it's from work, from sitting, or from sports. And for me today, it's from sports that my hips actually hurt a little bit while I do long sitting. And I've been told to accept the uncomfortableness while doing meditation. So I thought I would just bite my lips and then go through it. But somehow my attention keeps getting drawn to that body part. I keep thinking about the soreness or the discomfortness on my body, on my hips. And I just wonder, in such a case, that should I keep doing sitting meditation as long as it's healthy, or in that case that we should actually try other position for meditation so that I can distract myself to avoid such a distraction. Mm-hmm. I feel a conflict because I've also heard that in such a more extreme case that it's actually a good chance to maybe find more enlightenment or find more inputs by going through such a difficulties. So I just not really sure what I should do here.
Sure. Thank you for bringing this to us as stillness practitioners and people who love to move. And you were saying your discomfort from sports is currently what you're experiencing as distracting. So I find there's always these two choices. One is for part of the time to allow stillness to be the container of listening to the discomfort, to see what it's like directly from its own side. And so to go into the hips and let them be recognized as a pulsing, friction-filled, tension-pressured reality. And it's like this kaleidoscope of a whole other domain is revealed rather than just my hips hurt. And so in that way, we start to realize pain is alive, and it's not as solid and permanent. It often has different flickers going on. Now, if we were in a meditation retreat and all other interpersonal and kind of professional or creative endeavors were put in the periphery, that exploration becomes very kind of life-changing. We start to recognize how much of our attitudes about our discomfort feed the discomfort. And those insights can really be worn into our psyche for when we get home. But when we're practicing more in the midst of worldly life, and we did some sports and now we're really sore, and yet this is our meditation time, the second choice is we're kind of asking almost too much of ourselves. If this is our very precious and unique opportunity for listening to the subtle cues, and if the whole time I'm just with the pain of that activity that I did before, and I'm attempting to notice that it flickers and that it's, you know, then after a while it's like, oh, I'm just enduring this. And like you said, biting my lip. So I would change my posture so that it's just not a heavy body experience the whole time. There's just so much more value to a little bit of that. And then how might I sit, lay down, or sit up on the futon or whatever's nearby so that I can go to these other dimensions psychologically and mentally. I hope that helps.
I understood. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. And I have seen some of what you've said in the chat. I will continue to look at that. But with this last 6 minutes, I would love us to have an opportunity for a third meditation time before we end together. So take your seat. And as just came up, take your seat in a way that feels like it's not going to be so bound by bodiness. So what would be most comfortable for you? It is a short meditation, but still less dukkha in the physical realm. So we can notice that this third dimension of our mental gateway has both content and just clear openness. And that's the mind itself has details, and the nature of mind is completely clear and bright and objectless. So let's first tune in. But instead of going into the head to tune in, which can bring the energy really up into the thinking apparatus, let's feel like there's an opening in the third eye region that lets us see into the insight realms. But there's this like a meridian or a vibrant tube that we slide down. We just like turned a knob in the third eye, but we're going to slide down and feel the connection to the heart space and the openness there to our interpersonal dynamics, pleasure and pain, people and aloneness. And then we're going to go through that inner imaginary tube, central channel, and come down into the heart. And so we're connecting the three main energy centers while we sit these few minutes. And we rest in the belly, primarily like a buoyant bath of salted water where we don't have to hold ourselves up like the Dead Sea. And we first, on purpose, notice the ideas that we've been contemplating or creatively revisiting lately, or compulsively contracted into. What's the mind been up to? And are the ideas, is there a quality of dukkha in them? Quality of sukha in some? Just what's this like? Okay, so there's nothing that we're turning away from. We're not trying to extract thoughts or push them to the side, but we are going to allow them now because we open that gate, the insight center, the third eye. Now imagine it's really wide, like as wide as a large park. So park has lots of plants and diversity in it, but it has lots of space and oxygen in it. And so we're going to let our mind be oxygenated this last few minutes together while a slight, like soft sounding mental ka sound pulsing through your mind stream, your heart stream, and your belly space. Spaciousness, vertically in the interior and horizontally wide, wide, wide all around you. And let this ka, this space, hold your 10,000 joys and sorrows. The innumerable ups and downs you've had, are having, and will experience. You can end with the hands together at the heart and the internal wish that we continue to take refuge in space, internal space, without ignoring what's in the space. That we continue to offer refuge to others in their spaces of dukkha or sukha, in relation to many things and us included. And that we continue to feel that we are part of a very vast mystery. And that this mystery is best taprooted when we rest in our being and we relax the doing of this and that and are wide awake in that space. May it be so.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you all for sharing this brief time, but it felt like the tentacles of all of us were in the sukha of connection. Until next time, thank you, Marty. So appreciate you holding us together this way. And of course, Sangha Live.